Well, David, I thought of one thing you could have done last Saturday. You could have went to Walmart and nobody would have known the difference. November the 30th, to be exact, Brother Glenn, of 1990 was when you came to Quebec on that Friday night and you married Michelle and I. And I do remember, we went to, on our honeymoon, and we went to Pigeon Forge, and you know, like any young couple, you know, a humble couple, I should say, you know, I went back to work that following Saturday, worked 12 hours that day. They offered me a little bit of overtime, and not hardly as prevalent as it is now. You had to grab it back then, you know, when you got some. So I worked a 12-hour shift, and about 12:30 that morning, you know, I was sound asleep, and dispatch called. It was a Sunday morning at that point, and I don't mind telling you, the phone rang, and it's usually not a good thing when your phone rings at 12:30 in the morning, and I think anybody would agree with me in that perspective. So the dispatcher told me, and her name is Melody Land. I'll remember Melody from here on. And she told me that there was a crash on Central Park. And she said, you know, that my supervisor, Lieutenant Thompson, wanted me to go get up and head to that. And I did. I started getting up. Well, she called back. So I thought, well, if Michelle wasn't awake, she's surely awake now. She said, "You sound a little bit groggy, R.C." And I said, "I was a little bit groggy." But anyways, so Central Park from where I lived in Lebanon was a pretty good, pretty good little clip, you know, when I left there and I pulled up. And if you don't know Central Park, you know where Providence and all of that is. It's kind of going towards Nashville, and there's a lot of hills and curves. So when I got there, as soon as I came up on the scene and I came over the hill, I looked there, and I could see, of course, the red lights and all of those things, and I saw the yaw marks, and that's just kind of something that I looked at, you know, to start helping me digest everything that I was looking at. I saw those yaw marks, and I could tell that they had left the road, and then I looked way up in a yard up there, and I could see the remnants of a white 1976 Chevy Camaro. Now, you might ask yourself, how can I be so descriptive when I remember that? I'll take things to the grave that I seen that night. And I mean that with all of my heart. But as I looked up there and I seen it, and that's what I did. You always, and you know what I mean, you look around and you are soaking it all in, and that car had hit that tree so hard that the car had separated. The motor and the transmission was over in a field, and the rest of the car was wrapped around a tree. And for those of you that remember those old Camaros, they had a console in the middle, and there was a young man laying there, lifeless. He was dead. I started looking around, and there was kids inside this house, and, you know, a lot of activity going on, and, you know, it's my job to start reeling all of that in. There were four kids in that house, and I could tell they were distraught, you know, because they had just seen something in their life that most people will never see in a lifetime, and truthfully shouldn't see in a lifetime. So as I looked around, and I went in there, and, you know, and I'm doing all my stuff that I had seen, and, you know, I go there and I see, you know, it's kind of painful because everything that they've just seen, it's my job to start getting statements from them. And I do. I get the statements from them, and I'm interviewing them and asking them what happened. And the shock in their face will never cease to amaze me. And they should have shock in their face. These are teenagers. So their parents are coming, and their parents are talking to them, and they're relieved, and you know, and I sit there, and I go back outside, and I look, and I see a mom and a dad down there at the edge of the road that didn't have the same perspective that those parents did that was inside that house. These kids had been together all day long. These kids had been drinking and doing things. Now, not all of them, okay? But some of them more so than others. They left a place on Belinda City Parkway, and I don't know if you know where that is in Mount Juliet, but they came out and hit South Mount Juliet Road, and they went towards Central Pike, and they made a ride onto Central Pike. And they were going with such speed over those hills that that's when they crashed. And that's what I found out by talking to those kids. Nothing will ever prepare you to talk to those parents. Nothing. And I remember them being down there, and I remember going and having to tell them what they didn't want to hear. So this went on, and you know, it takes a while, and you know, our ADA back there will say it takes a while to prepare a case and do it right. Greg, you know that. And you got to do it right because you only really get a one-time shot with that. Well, we finally went to court. When we went to court, I looked in the courtroom, and those four teenagers that were such good friends were sitting in different places in the courtroom. I thought about that day, you know, these kids had played t-ball together and grew up together. All of that was gone. All of that had exploded. Those children had to come together and they had to testify against their friend who was driving that car that killed someone that day. Now that guy that was driving that car came in. He had a cane. He was in his early 20s at that point. He had a hole in his throat that had healed where they had to do a trach that night. His hand was paralyzed, and I thought his life will never be the same. And it wasn't. He was very fortunate that he came in there and he was able to plead to a lesser charge. That don't bother me, you know. I present what I have, and, you know, where it falls, it falls. If you take it personally, you won't last in this business long, will you, Greg? You just won't. But at the conclusion of that, I'll tell you what I did. I looked around, and I thought, you know, there were, even though he got this reduced, there were no winners in this. There were no winners at all. I looked at the parents that was there that night, and I reflected back on them. And I know those parents are thinking, you know, where did we go wrong? You know, parents will wonder, you know, anything that you do, you attempt so much to follow Proverbs 22. And it means a lot when you read 22 and verse 6, and it says to train up that child in the way that they should go. Because, you know, when they are old, you would not want them to depart from that. I've seen a lot of parents feel that burden upon themselves. And it's painful when your children make mistakes, but it's also a growing process of life. I thought about those friends that wondered, where did they go wrong? You know, when you're growing up and you're in high school, you want to fit in, you want to admire your peers, you want to be like them in many aspects. You want to do what they are doing. They're having fun. It may seem like fun, and I want to be a part of that. I mean, you want to be a part of that. You know, you want to have what others have. And I want to submit to you, that's our world. That is our world. I've often thought of all those kids, how many times they've ran in through their minds, you know, the five that was still there, you know, the four that observed the crash that was following the two that did crash, and I should have clarified that. It's easy for us to sit up here now and say no, but when you're in that situation, it's not so easy for you to say no. You think about when their afternoon started and they were having fun and things were unfolding and they were doing things they shouldn't be doing. We can say now they should have stopped, but they didn't stop. our world. You know, in our world, in life, you feel pressure. You feel that pressure, like I said, to fit in. You feel that pressure. You want to admire your peers. I can remember Mom and Dad saying, RC, you don't need to be hanging out with them. You know, it's painful to say that now, but Mom and Daddy was right. They knew what they were talking about. You feel the pressure to do what they do. You feel the pressure to have what they have, as I said. But you got to learn sometimes just to say no. Y'all, we're the smartest country in the world. You know, we have the ability to, if you will, have a plan of attack for the things that happens and things, these awful things. We are an educated people. You know, we're going to stop these kind of things from happening. Well, let me tell you something. Believe it or not, and this was 1990, as things progress along, alcohol crashes have went down. But drug crashes have went up. So what have we learned? Not really learned a whole lot, have we? Not really learned a whole lot. I was sitting there reading some stats, you know, and I can tell you about 26% of the fatalities, you know, involve impaired driving in some shape, form, or fashion. I want you to know that, you know, and you remember a lot of this, and you will when I bring it up to you, the mid-1990s, you know, especially in our area and really just everywhere that you can imagine, in the mid-1990s, something started coming into our area and into our homes, and that's when we started experiencing methamphetamine. You remember that. You remember the trucks going up and down the road. I can remember taking my clothes off and leaving them away from my children because I didn't want them to smell what I have smelled or something beyond my clothes that might, you know, have the remnants of that on there. Hey, we had to learn. We had to learn in our job and in our capacity because, you know, that's something that we had never experienced before. You know, that makes it fun, doesn't it, Jordan? You're learning things new all the time to keep yourself safe. So here come those meth labs, here come all of these things. You know, we started seeing people who had sores on their face, people were losing their teeth. I'm not trying to gross you out, but there was people that when they would get bread, if they were incarcerated, they would urinate on their bread. Now you think, now why would you do that? What when you urinate, you're filtering the impurities out of your body. Guess what? They'd set it on a shelf and let it dry. I'll let you use your imagination of what they would do after that. That's where things were going there in the mid-90s. They were cooking meth in their homes. People were blowing themselves up. They were burning themselves real bad. You know, they couldn't even concentrate on feeding their own children. They couldn't take care of their own things in life. I remember schools that would have clothes set aside for children that would come in and they would smell that in their clothes. That's because you have educators that care. My mom was like that. She was an educator for many years. She would buy clothes for those kids and she'd buy coats for them. She was a yard sale fanatic. Yeah, wasn't she, Jones? She would take you out to beat you to a yard sale. I used to laugh watching her and my aunts be the first one up there. But looking at that, folks, I just want to tell you, when you think about that, you know, when I'm talking about people couldn't concentrate on feeding their children, luckily kids would come to school starving to death. You know, they would eat their food and they would even eat the leftovers from other kids because they were so hungry. I had a little girl one time, or an SRO friend of mine that was in a school, and I won't tell you which school, but he said he noticed that this little girl started, you know, she got some new shoes and some things like that, and he pointed that out to her, and he said, kind of what, hey, how you, I like your shoes and all that, and she goes, well, my dad's got a new job. And he said, well, what's he doing? Said, he's making paint. Oh, really? Yeah. Where at? In the garage out back. Well, 3 days later, you figured out what he was making, and it wasn't paint. Kids are so truthfully honest. I appreciate that. In our job, you don't remember those, Jordan, we got these big old pretty yellow suits. I kind of looked like Big Bird when I had mine on. We got these big yellow suits, you know, and you're supposed to be able to zip up, and we had, of course, you know, duct tape. You know, you put your glove on, and we put duct tape. We're supposed to put duct tape around them. You know, we got those. If you ever see any more of them, Jordan, they're in those red and black bags, you know. You might just find one somewhere with dust all over them. You know, the thing about that, folks, is this right here. When methamphetamine was so strong, you know, they would make it, and they would just kind of trump you, for lack of a better way to put it. They would figure out some other way to, you'd start figuring out what they were doing, and they would change their process. You remember when you've heard of shake and bake, you know, they did it that way. We had to change what we do in our job. We started, you know, when I was a fresh young trooper, I'll never forget this, I had an old senior guy from Sumner County, and he asked me one time, and he said, RC, have you met Cootie Brown? And I'm like, I'm racking my brain. I'm like, I don't think so. 3 weeks later, I met him on Coles Ferry Pike. That's a figurative term, because you've heard of drunker than Cootie Brown. That's what he was talking about. When I come on, that's what we dealt with. Now, you know, we started dealing then, you know, you had to learn to recognize the signs of drugs, so we had to make ourselves better. We had to make ourselves where we could present cases for prosecution. But most of all, we had to make ourselves safe from being exposed to those kind of things. I don't know if you remember when the bath salts was going on around here. You may remember that. Well, by the time that was out and the legislative session came back in, I don't mind telling you, Charlotte Burks introduced this legislation, and before that could get passed, they changed some of the chemical ingredients in it that made that law null and void. That's the stuff that you do to make it better. But once again, folks, we're an educated nation. We aren't going to expose ourselves to that. We got smart that we didn't need to be doing meth labs and cooking that stuff in our homes. You know, we are an educated nation. So what did we start doing? We started buying the methamphetamine and stuff from down south. And they laced it with fentanyl. You know what I'm saying? Hey, we're a smart nation. I say that for this here. And if you ever YouTube your video, you can YouTube the videos and you'll see that there. And it will tell you this. You know, you can see officers that have inhaled fentanyl and they're having to give them Narcan. It's got to the point that even some of these things that they're lacing these drug with are so strong that sometimes it may take 2 to 3 doses of Narcan to bring officers around. You know, it's real. It's our world. And the things that we do, it is something that just, I'm just going to say this, this border situation is real. It is real. We learned that the other night, Carrie, when we were in here. We learned a lot of things. It is very, very real. And if anybody's not taking that seriously, they better. But, you know, and the thing that I remember about that is, you know, lives were changed. Lives were changed by one dose of that. I knew people that were addicted from that point. And that's sad. But that's how that got a hold of you and would not let go. I like looking at stats, and I seen one that was not long ago, and you might have seen it as well, but it was February the 6th when I looked at this commentary, and it was talking about a new study was released, and it was ranking the most sinful states in America. All right, where do you think Tennessee ranked? In the top 5. Well, actually, they said we were in the top 10. I thought, whew, that's not too bad, top 10. And then they said, actually, we're in the top 5. At least we were 5th, okay? But I thought, how did they come to that conclusion? And they looked in there and they said, 55 indicators for immoral or illicit behavior. It talked about including violent crimes. It talked about excessive drinking. It talked about gambling disorders, you know, among our population. And I thought of gambling disorders. You know, when the lottery first came out, I was a road trooper in White County. And there was a guy that lived out in Hickory Valley, and I was getting gas at the MAPCO. I know he lived 10 miles out in the country. He rode his bicycle to get a lottery ticket and headed back to Hickory Valley. You know, he wanted that lottery ticket pretty bad. So when we ranked third for anger and hatred, 15th for jealousy. I didn't really know what to think about jealousy. I can tell you, when R.C. Christian looks at jealousy, and what I think about, the only jealousy I'm going to have today, and if there's any over there, is if Larry Acuff gets that piece of chocolate pie before I do. Now, I'll run you, Larry. I'll race you for that, okay? No. And it's talked about second for excesses and vices, 11th for greed, 5th for lust, and 11th for laziness. I didn't really know how to take that. I guess anybody can come up with a study, you know, and put their name on it, you know, and people like me will read it. And I thought about our world. Well, we're in luck because who do you think's in front of us when you talk about gambling and stuff like this? Actually, you know, Nevada for sure. Louisiana. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to Louisiana. Michelle and I went, and all I can say is I knew he wasn't in Tennessee anymore. California, like Forrest Gump. That's all I'm going to say about that. Florida, you think of Florida coming in ahead for some of those things as well. I'm going to change gears just a little bit because, you know, and understanding what David asked me to do for this presentation, and I want to just kind of broaden this so we get a true picture of everything today. About a year ago, I was transferred to Criminal Investigations Division, and that did give me, you know, I do have the whole state. Thankfully, I've got four excellent lieutenants across the state that does a very good job. But we're involved in a variety of cases, you know, auto theft. We do come to crashes and things such as that, you know, to investigate that as well. We investigate identity theft in the state. We investigate odometer fraud. Just a multitude of things that you wouldn't think, insurance fraud, several different things. I want to share with you just something that hopefully that I'm going to try to help you with this, okay? Because it enlightened me. You know, Facebook Marketplace, now I'm confident, I'll tell you right now, we bought furniture for the girls off Facebook Marketplace when they was going to college, and it worked very well. You know, but you got to be really careful when you're looking at things on Facebook Marketplace. And I'm going to enlighten you a little bit on that. It wasn't long ago that a guy was looking there and he seen a Toyota RAV4, you know, a fairly new one. And the guy was wanting $25,000 for it. Okay, well, guess what? That sounds like a good deal. I'm gonna call that guy. So he went there and he did that. And you know, the guy, he's talking to him and he's, you know, looking at the car, and the guy's like, you know what, if you really want it, I'll take $20,000. And that guy's thinking, hey, the deal's getting better and better. Well, if you ever go to something like that, I want to tell you, somebody's telling you, I'm getting a divorce, and I don't want my wife to know I'm selling this car, and I got to have cash. Better take off running, you know, and I'm going to say that because of this reason right here. A lot of people are able to steal these cars. This car was stolen from Enterprise Rental Car. And you know what you can do on computers this day and age? He made a fake title. And before this guy even realized what happened, he had given this man $20,000 cash for this car that wasn't, you know. And I'll tell you what we did. We found it. The guys that I had in county. Oops, I told you. I didn't mean to do that. I really didn't. The guy was going to get window tint put on it. He had no idea. This was a good, honest man who lost $20,000 of his life savings because of a crook. I'm telling you that because if I don't share that with you, I don't feel like I'm helping you get an understanding of where our world is. Sometimes it's not all the huge, you know, things that, you know, you might see on the media to understand what that is. People are able to put fake VINs on vehicles, you know, the vehicle identification number. There was a police department in Middle Tennessee that had a vehicle that they were using in their fleet that they had seized from a drug dealer. And they were using that vehicle with that fake VIN. Guess what? It was stolen. You know, so you got police officers who've been driving a vehicle for 2 years that's stolen. That's how smooth and how, you know, people are able to work these things through and you not understand what they're doing. You know, the only person that knew that that thing had a fake VIN on there was the mechanic there at that City Garage. He told him, he said, I knew that wasn't real, but they didn't believe him. He was a mechanic. That man knew exactly what he was saying. The reason I'm telling you stuff like that right there is, you know, it's even fooled Vroom. I know a guy that bought one, and they actually had to refund his money. I read a story the other day in the news about that. They're fooling Carvana. They're fooling everybody. Crooks have a lot of time to think of how to manipulate things and make things happen to their advantage. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know what I'll hear next week that somebody has done. I know a lady the other day that went to a bank, and just thankfully this woman in the bank knew her. She came in and she was nervous, she was anxious, and she wanted to withdraw money out of her savings account. And she knew something wasn't right. So she asked her what's wrong, and she finally broke down and started crying and said somebody had called her and told her to do this. And she was fixing to send them that money. People are out there to take advantage of you. And I hate to say it, but that's our world. That is our world. Auto theft is insane. I read a story the other night out of Memphis. You know, they were going into a store and taking things that they had. All three vehicles that they used in the theft were stolen. You know, it is so real. And I guess the thing is, I don't want you to be taken advantage of. And if I don't share stuff like that with you, you know, I don't feel like I'm doing what I need to be doing. I thought, and I probably shouldn't say this, but, you know, somebody, sin is sin. I guess it'll just be a little bit easier on God, somebody that's stolen from an elderly person. I shouldn't have said that, should I, Carrie? I don't know, but it's just how it is. I'm really fixing to step on some toes right now, folks. You know, how many of you have been sitting there and felt your phone vibrate since we've been in here thinking, oh, man, I've missed a call. I don't want to look because RC may see me. You know, don't we count on these things? I'm not this important. I have two. I'm really not that important, okay? But what I want to share with you is this right here. I see so many people this day and age, you know, and we do count on our electronic devices. You know, I was laughing the other day because Michelle found an old phone and Emerson would pick it up and act like she's talking to somebody. And I was like, sis, you just don't know what it would have been like growing up in the 80s. It was perfect, you know, just to be able to, if they got you, you know, you heard the phone ring and you'd come running in from the outside to try to catch it. And you'd get there and they wouldn't be there. And you'd like, you know, and go back outside. Kind of the same when you're out there, that TV antenna. Right there. You moved. No, I didn't. Yeah, you did. No, anyways. What I'm fixing to tell you right now and what I'm fixing to say is this right here. The stuff that's going on social media, the stuff that's going on that people are hiding behind computers, it's sickening.
That's right.
It is truly sickening. It's not been long ago that we had a Metropolitan Police Department in Texas call our team. And this case is not been adjudicated, so I'm going to be very careful how I explain it to you. But they called wanting help locating a 14-year-old girl. And here's what I'm wanting to tell you about this right here. You know, they realized that this child was in Tennessee. They did that because they were following this child, you know, on the computer hits, you know, and the sites that were promoting that. So eventually what they did, they were able to get on there and set up a meeting. So here come this child, gets out of the car, and there's about 10 THP officers, federal people, that gets out of this car to try to catch this child. The child runs. And I'm telling you, the thing about that, when you think about why would she have ran, this child's mind was already warped is the first word that comes to my mind, and that's sincere. You got to understand, you know, that these people are very well versed in what they do. There are people that can hide behind apps to get to your children. There are people that can send them messages that you have no idea. You think things are simple. You think things are not, you know, involved in that. But it is. It's happening every day, and it's happening right here in Tennessee. Every county in the state of Tennessee has had an instance of human trafficking, from the smallest to the largest. I want to tell you this right here. When I thought about that, you know, the predators, they know exactly what to say. They know exactly what to do to draw them in. They promise you things. They play mind games. They promise you money. They may promise you food. They promise you safety. You know, they promise you shelter. They'll even get them hooked on drugs. They give you your basic needs. They're also smart enough to know who they can prey upon. Now, chances are they're not going to try to prey upon somebody that's got a good, solid home. But they're going to know somebody that doesn't. And they're going to know somebody that's got issues in their life because they're vulnerable. That's who they want because they're easy prey. And they're going to do that, and they're going to make that happen. You know, there's homes, and those children have, you know, economic problems. You know, they may be coming from split homes, whatever the case may be. And I know of grandparents and that's trying to do the best that they can to raise their grandchildren's. They may have ran away. They may have been in foster care. There might even have been a history of, you know, childhood sexual abuse in their family. These people know what they're doing, and they know what to say. And if you think they won't suck a child in very quickly, we're all very fooled. I want to submit to you, and I said every county has experienced this, and I know I'm just hitting on the tip of the iceberg with this, and I'm because in the essence of time, we could spend a whole hour just talking about the stuff here that's going on. All I can say is that the individuals that's constantly on those computers every day looking for prey and looking for the things that they can do to pull people into this trade, they can hide behind their computers, they can post fictitious names, they can say anything they want to, but I guarantee you that God knows their name. And equally disturbing is the people that want those victims who these predators have preyed upon and want to be with these young people that's hiding behind their little electronic devices. God knows their name too. And they better fear that, because their time will indeed come. God definitely knows their name. Brother David, I can't remember when you told me to stop.
Sometime in around 10:30 would be good.
All right, sir, I'll start winding it up, because we'll even incorporate a bathroom break in there. One of the last things I want to share with you today was something that I read on January the 3rd, sometime around the first of the year. You know, I told you I'm not a tremendous stat person, but this one stuck out to me, okay? This one I looked at really hard. In 2023, 378 police officers were shot in the line of duty. 378. And I hate to tell you where Tennessee ranks in that. Tennessee is fourth in the nation for officer-involved shootings. It's not been 2 weeks ago that our guys was in Blount County with everybody else up there looking for the person that shot that Blount County deputy up there. Thinking about, you know, how could we rank fourth? Well, last year we were 10th. Once again, I say our world. Last year we were 10th. I'll tell you who beat us. Texas. Of course, how many Tennessees could you put inside Texas? You know, Pennsylvania was second. California was third. We had one less than California, and that ranked us fourth. So you think about it, and I looked those stats up a little bit harder, and 138 officers were shot ambush style. When you think of ambush style, what that basically means is they had no clue that they were going to be fired upon. They walked right into it. Out of those 378, you know, were 46 officers killed, and, you know, thankfully, depending on where they were at, medical aid was, you know, readily available, and that helped them. I want to submit to you, out of those people and out of those numbers represent, they represent fathers. They represent mothers. They represent sons and daughters. They represent heroes. You know, the violence that's going on in our world, you know, it's horrifying. It's really simply unsustainable. I'm going to be really personal with you right now. In 2020, I'll never forget me driving from White County coming to Cookeville, and I could see the storms from the Putnam County tornadoes north. I could see the sky was, the lightning was insane. And I'm going to get somewhere with this, okay, I promise. We stayed on the ground over here in Putnam County for right at 3 weeks solid, no days off. You know, I was there, I know, for 3 weeks. And then after that, what happened? COVID. During all that was going on, you know what? We had the rioting and stuff started to begin in other places. I saw a turn right then of people who all of a sudden started feeling a sense of entitlement in their lives just because they were born.
Right.
You know, the only entitlement that I've got is I need to be gracious every day that my feet hit the floor and I get vertical. I need to look up and just thank God you've blessed me with another day.
Amen.
That's who deserves the entitlement that I have in my life. Amen. I'm entitled to get out here and work very hard to provide for my family. I'm entitled to live a Christian, godly life to the best of my ability. That's what I feel my entitlement exists. I have watched this, you know, in 2022, 330 officers were shot. Like I said, 378 in 2023. I don't know where this entitlement's going to stop. I do want to live my life prepared, though. I can say that. With that and these numbers, you know, we're facing a retention and a recruitment crisis. You know, you look around and you see the evil in the world, and, you know, how do you deal with that? You know, we, of course, in a godly way, we think of dealing with evil naturally with good. And I do believe in that. You know, where do we begin? I want to submit to you that we need to pray. I think that we need to raise up godly leaders in every aspect of life, period. The church is a given, but we also need to raise godly leaders as politicians. We need to raise godly leaders out here as we're, you know, letting people in businesses, in the schools, everything that we do. We need to teach people right from wrong. Gosh, the same way my mom and daddy did me. That got painful sometimes, I'll just tell you. Romans 12, verses 9 and 10, I thought about that. Let love be without dissimulation. Let it be genuine. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love, and honor preferring one another. Folks, I guess what I'm trying to say is I see these numbers, and it begins with genuine love. Now, I don't know that you can sit there and wrap yourselves around the mindset of people that do evil things. I have spoke with guys in my unit that investigates a lot of the things that they do, and they say, you know, sadly enough, you even got to think in a way that they do. That's kind of sad when you tell a police officer that they got to think like a thug. But the ones that do can investigate in a very positive way. The purpose of why we're here, and I like this understanding at times, and I like this word right here when it says renew. Whatever your definition is personally of renew, you definitely think of renewing in a spiritual way in settings like this. It's nice to be able to come together where we have people and to be with in a place where people here today reflects the same godly beliefs that we do, and everybody in this room, I'm confident, wants to go to heaven. So for lack of a better way to put it, David said the best way to start out with renew is we're going to start down here and tell you where our world's at. But the thing that we're going to do definitely is we're going to build upon that as this day progresses along and tomorrow as well. David challenged me when he gave me this. He said, RC, I want a real perspective in your eyes of where things are. And I've tried to give you that today. What I want you to understand is, and especially young people that's in this room, you're going to be exposed to people that may not have the blessings in life that you do. You're going to be exposed to people that may come from, you know, split homes and things such as that right there. You may have heard somebody in school that might have told somebody else, maybe even messaging somebody on the computer. Those little small, what you might think are insignificant things, are huge. They need your help. They may be reaching out to you because they know you. They may know you go to church every time that the doors are open. They may be looking to you for that strength that they need to step up and overcome these things. There's a lot of pressure there, but it's real and it's genuine. And let me say this, be thankful if people can look to you and say you've got a good home life, that you've got parents that love you, and that you've got parents that cares about your being. Never underestimate the power of that. I want you to understand if people are looking to you for that guidance, I want you to think specifically about 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. You are defined as a peculiar people. Ain't you glad that we are? I want to be a peculiar people. You better believe I do. I don't want to conform to this world. You know, in Romans 2 or 12 and verse 2, when it talks about that. And the next thing I want to tell you is this. We've talked about a lot of things today that's plaguing our world. I've tried to be broad with it. I've tried to be real, and I've tried to express it in a way that I hope you've learned something in this period of time that we've been together. But don't ever lose sight of capitalizing on that opportunity. Right. Never feel that you're doing something that something insignificant may be very huge in somebody's life that needs that. Everybody has a soul.
That's right.
And it's our job to be mindful of that and help them in the ways that we can. I got 5 minutes, really quick. Something else that's bad in our country right now is hog trouble. How many of you got farms and you got a problem with hogs? You'll love this. You're the only one in here to love this. You're the only one, raise your hand. And I'm going to try to get this ready for you, Larry, for the next round and the next speaker too, okay? When you think of hogs, you think about hog trouble. Hogs multiply quickly, don't they? They multiply quickly. You know, they're damaging the things that they do. Sin, when not checked, will multiply quickly. And if you ain't careful, what you think is a small, infrequent sin, the next thing you know, it turns into a daily habit. I thought about this. Hogs are nocturnal and they're mostly active at night. John 3, verse 19, men love darkness rather than light. These crooks love darkness rather than light, you know, because their deeds were evil. Fear consumes people at night. Many years before I ever got on the highway patrol, I worked at the ambulance service. People would call you at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, honey, I've been sick all day. I thought, boy, I sure wish you'd have called about 6 o'clock last night. You know, because, you know. But you see that, you know, that our fears, you know, we associate darkness with bad things. We really do. Hogs run in packs. I thought about that too, you know. Exodus 23 and verse 2, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. Mom and daddy always said, be careful who you hang out with. Boy, they were right. Because, boy, they'll pull you in. You know, if it smells bad, it probably is bad. And hogs are destructive. When you think of hogs are destructive, here's what I want you to think about. They search for food. They'll destroy their yards. They'll destroy land. And then I thought of Revelation 21 and verse 8. Sin is a destroyer of all things good and will cause one soul to be lost in hell. And that's real. As we're standing here today. No matter what, we think about controlling hogs, and that is a serious issue if you're a farmer, and I mean that with great sincerity, it is. But God has supplied the cure for sin, and He did that through the innocent sacrifice and precious blood of His dear Son. And it tells us that in 1 Peter 1, 17 through 21. Thank you for your attention. Once again, I hope you've learned something this morning. And David, I hope I've accomplished the goal that you gave me. And that was my intent. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you.